And we are here with former Iron Maiden vocalist and current Blaze Bailey vocalist, Blaze Bailey. Blaze, great to have you on the show. And I'm a big fan of your new album, The Man Who Would Not Die. And was this album a concept record? Because I'm noticing a lot of the tracks seem like they would be.
Well, it didn't start out as a concept. It started out as a title. Because of the things I've been through in the last few years, you know, I had no record deal, no management, no full band lineup, hardly any gigs at all, and the previous record label owed me a lot of money. They stole from me and betrayed me and blackmailed me, and I was in a really dark place, and as I started to get it back together, because my wife found me and encouraged me to get back together, and she still thought that I had something that was worth listening to, and you know I could still do good work, and that it was possible to that people would still be interested in what I had to say and the music that I do. Then I just started to think, yes, well, why should I give up? Why should I just stop just because somebody else thinks that they are right? You know, when I have letters from fans and emails from fans from all over the world that say, I'm looking forward to your next album, or please keep going, or the music that you've done means a lot to me and it's helped me, and things like this. So that's when I started thinking about The Man Who Would Not Die as much as a metaphorical death, that the death of my career and the death of me as a singer and of Blaze Bailey, and just becoming another unskilled factory worker.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it was The Man Who Would Not Die. And in a purely coincidental way, then the whole of the album, many of the lyrics and songs reflect the attitude of not admitting defeat and never giving up even in the face of impossible odds, and also revenge and retribution. And it's a thing, you know, I've never really, I've always thought, no, you know, try not to have these dark feelings of revenge, but I just let everything out on this album, and I thought, no, I'll write exactly what I feel, I'll tell it the way it is. So Blackmailer is a true story about the last record label and how they blackmailed me into signing over a licensing deal for the whole world where they had only negotiated for Germany. And they withheld money that they owed me by contract to a point where I lost my house. So I thought, well, why not tell everybody what cunts they were? And so that's what I did. And just as a theme, it seems that that's what's happened. You know, waiting for my life to begin, I had to work a job, just like everybody else does, you know, and go back to that, which I hadn't done for a very long time. And suddenly I wasn't a singer in a band anymore. Suddenly I wasn't a singer in a band who was working a job just to keep going and pay some bills while I was waiting for something to happen with the band, which is the way so many of us are as musicians. I was suddenly someone who was a factory worker or a shop worker, and I had no band, and I wasn't waiting for anything. And so I was waiting for my life to begin. What would happen? If this is my life, I just don't want it. And so all the songs seem to just follow that theme, and though it's not a concept album, it does have a very strong theme of taking it from the start, from defiance and revenge, and in the end, a kind of resolution where, okay, whatever has happened to me in the past, this is where I am now, and this is where I live. I live now. I don't live in the past. I don't let the past and those feelings, those dark feelings, I'm not a victim of those. What I am is someone who has been shaped and learned from those things, and I live now for the time that I have now, and it's the album has lasted, you know, since it came out, and so many people have said so many great things about it, and I think partly that's because everything on it is really, really genuine.
Mm-hmm. Blaze, you're somebody that has dealt with quite a bit of adversity over the last 2, 3, 4 years, and there are many bands in similar situations and many musicians in these same types of situations. And, you know, what advice would you have for people in bands especially that are dealing with this type of stuff right now?
I don't know. I don't think there is any advice that I can give as a person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've just been very, very lucky. I've been very fortunate. I've been in terrible situations. I've always fought to try and carry on with my music, and the one time where I really thought, well, it just doesn't seem to make any sense, am I really faced now with having to say I can't carry on, then my wife found me and she saved my life. You know, she mm-hmm. found me. I was drinking heavily. I was broke. I wasn't doing anything. I didn't have a full-time band. And so she found me, and then I'm very, very lucky that fans that have listened to my music for years and years are still very loyal and encouraging. And when I did my first few shows of the comeback, then people came out to see me. And I'm just very, very lucky. So I think what the main thing that has sustained me is that I've always tried to make music that I feel has a value and is what I wanted to do, and not following a trend and not trying to be successful or commercial. It's the music that I feel I want to do. And I think even though that's been a struggle sometimes, especially when you're working with a label or people who aren't so creative, then that has been a small grain that has kept me going. But to be honest, I really don't blame people for giving up. It's so tough to keep going, and it's not everybody who is as fortunate as I am to have the incredible fans and amazing friends and family that have been supportive to me in those really dark times.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have a new live album out called The Night That Would Not Die. And what's going on with that?
Well, we made our own DVD, and we couldn't put all the tracks from the DVD in Switzerland at Z7. We recorded it last December. The live sound, the actual sound of it, is incredible for us, and we just thought, oh, this would be great to put out as a live album, and we could put all of the tracks on it from the evening, some of them that didn't get on. So that's what we're intending to do, and we're just finishing the artwork right now, and in a few weeks that'll come out on our online store, and then if we think it will do well, then we might put it to retail as well. But the main thing is to have it online so that hardcore fans can get it and enjoy it, and it's something that we're really proud of, and we hope, because there's a lot of the new songs on there, you know, there's that certain amount of life that songs get live. It's not a pristine performance or anything like that. It's us on a night where we went and did our best and enjoyed ourselves. For that, you know, that's what it stands. That's what it stands as, and we're really, really proud of it. We hope people enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Blaze, your new album is kind of difficult to find over here in the States. And do you have any type of distribution here in the U.S.?
No, we don't have any major distribution in the U.S. It's our album is an import in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's on iTunes, or you have to order online.
Mm-hmm.
So we won't have any distribution now, I don't think, until we actually get a proper tour organised where we can come and visit and play to the fans that we've been waiting to see for such a long time.
Mm-hmm. I noticed your new album, instead of being called Blaze, or under the band name Blaze, it's called Blaze Bailey. And why did you decide to go from just the regular name Blaze to using your full name as Blaze Bailey?
Well, it's something I've wanted to do for quite a while, and it's something that I wish I'd done at the start. Call it Blaze Bailey, but there's a one-word answer to it, and that is Google. If you Google Blaze, you'll come up with all kinds of things that are nothing to do with me. Mm-hmm. If you Google Blaze Bailey, you'll more or less find me straight away.
Mm-hmm.
And I would meet fans from Iron Maiden and from Wolfsbane, and they would recognise me and say hi and say, oh, what are you doing now? And I'd say, well, I've got my own band together. And so, what's it called? Blaze. And they'd say, I've never heard of it. But if you say Blaze Bailey, then people instantly get that link from the singer of Wolfsbane and Iron Maiden. Mm-hmm. Oh, that name is familiar, than they do with Blaze. And we changed it, and we talked about it as a band, you know, and I said, well, this is why I think, it's not any less a band, but I think this name will work a lot better for us, and it's even more a band now than it was before, and it's Blaze Bailey is the name that we have, so people recognise the voice and then hopefully come and see us and see that we're a real band of musicians writing and playing together. And and so far, it seems to really have worked. The first gigs that we did after we changed the name, we played to twice as many people.
Mm-hmm.
And the first album, after we changed the name, we sold twice as many as the album before.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is just the fact that people recognise the name. You know, I'm not any different. I'm not, you know, any more important or anything like that. I think I have probably the best band that I've ever had, and I'm really enjoying my music as much as I ever have done. So that's why we changed it, really. We all talked about it, and it just seems to make sense, you know. Now there are even rap bands and rap labels and, I don't know, kind of dance compilations with the name Blaze, and PlayStation controllers and God knows what. So it's better to be Blaze Bailey.
Blaze, I know you said earlier you didn't have a band for quite a long time, and the current lineup you have, where did you find most of these guys?
Well, the first thing that I did was we had an offer come in from Poland, and they said we'd like to make a Blaze Bailey DVD, and we thought, well, perhaps that could be the start of the comeback. Perhaps, you know, I could use that to really be the first thing to start getting myself back out there and show people what I'm doing. And we thought, well, perhaps we could have an exclusive band again, and you know, people that were just working together. And so what happened was, then I thought, well, you know, before I've thought about all these practical considerations about who would have in the band and how they would get to rehearsals and how I would pay them. So this time I didn't think about any of that. I just thought, well, if I can have exactly who I wanted, who I think would be the absolute best person for the job, who would they be? And that's how I started looking. So at first I started looking on MySpace for bass players, and pretty soon I found David Bermudez, and he was in a band called Under Threat, and I listened to his music, and I saw some of his video clips and his blog and everything, and I got in touch with him and told him about my project and asked him if he'd like to be involved in it, and he did, and he's from Colombia in Bogota, and he was living in Wisconsin at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he spent a lot of time in America with his band Under Threat, trying to get his own label together and get a release together. So he became involved, and then as I was looking for a guitarist, he told me about his brother Nico, and I was absolutely blown away when I listened to his stuff. So he became involved, and it went from there, really. Those guys from Bogota, Colombia, and they were living in the US, and then my drummer, Larry Patterson, then he's originally from New Zealand. I had drummers from all over the world come and audition for me.
Mm-hmm.
But we went with him because he was obviously the best person as much as the best drummer. And then Jay Walsh is someone I've known for many, many years and respected as a guitarist for being innovative and individual. And he was filling in for me while we were trying to get the band together, and it was just going so well. We said, well, you know, we really think you should be a full member of the band and forget about the rest of your life and become a slave to us. And he did, thank God. So I have this incredible lineup that did the album, and we're writing together now towards the next album, and it's going really, really well. So I'm so fortunate that I managed to find those people.
Mm-hmm. I noticed about a year ago you did a little reunion gig with Wolfsbane, and how did you get back together with those guys, and how did the gig go for you?
Well, it was my wife's idea, because it was a very bad breakup at the time because of all the things involved with Sanctuary Management and all of this. And my wife gradually got us talking and gradually got us back together when I did this little gig in Tamworth, where we're all from. And then we were offered a small tour around the UK with the Wild Hearts. And we did it, and it was so much fun. It was just hilarious. They're, you know, we're so much older, but acting exactly the same as we were when we were first started off. It was so much fun that we just said at the end, well, should we leave it open? Let's not reform, but should we leave it open that if anything comes up and it doesn't sound like a lot of hard work, it sounds like fun, that if we're available, we'll do it. So that's how we left it. So so we did that thing with the Wild Hearts. And this year, the Choir Boys have asked us to go out and support them. So that should be highly amusing as well.
Mm-hmm. So who produced your new record, The Man That Would Not Die?
I produced it myself. And then I started off the production. And then David and Nico became involved as we got closer to doing the vocal stages of the album where we needed somebody to bounce ideas off. So really we've produced it as a band. I didn't want to work with any outside producers on this because I felt like I had such a strong and positive idea of what I wanted. And also I felt that we had the experience and talent in the band and we got along well enough to be able to make some of those compromises that you have to make for the overall benefit of the record and take your ego out of it, and instead of having what I particularly want, have what is best for the record.
Mm-hmm.
So so that's the way we did it, and I think that's the way we'll do it in the future. So we're a different band, really. We're not like any mainstream signed band. We do everything ourselves. We produce the album. It's our own record label. We get in touch with the artist and talk them through what we want and everything like this. So everything's ourselves. We're not a part of the mainstream music business.
Mm-hmm.
And we're a tiny underground metal band doing our own thing. And in some weird way, people seem to like it, and it seems to be working. I don't know why.
Blaze, I want to talk a bit about your past albums, and the first album I want to talk about is Silicon Messiah, and this album completely blew me away when it first came out. And was this about a computer taking over the world?
Yeah, in a lot of it, then what was happening was around that time, then they were developing the first gigabyte drives and the first terabyte storage, and there was the theory that human consciousness, if it could be stored, using a terabyte. And so that really sparked something in me. And, the things that were happening to me in my life at the time, I used those ideas and kind of put myself into those situations of what was happening to me in my own life and how that was referencing against the world that was changing to be in the information age. You know, it's in the information revolution, another technical revolution, and I'm living through it. So so that was a lot of it. And some of the songs and the ideas I was hoping to work on with Iron Maiden on the third album, but we never got to make that third album. So I used those ideas and concepts for my own album. And it's something that I'm very, very proud of. Silicon Messiah is a record that means a lot to me. It was a lot of hard work, a lot of things that I had to get done and get right for that. And I'm absolutely 100% proud of everything that we did on that album.
Mm-hmm. Now on to your second album, The Tenth Dimension. And the one track that really stuck out for me the most was the title track, The Tenth Dimension. And what did you write this about?
Well, the overall concept of the album is that it's the premise that there is ESP and there is a life. There is another life after death. There is a human soul, and there is a place that we go. Is the initial starting point of the album, and the tenth dimension is what I used as a place where that could possibly be, where the human soul could go to after death, and a place where you could still be connected to as a living soul. And the idea of the song The Tenth Dimension is that someone is able to control that and stop your immortal soul going to heaven and stop the psychic connection between you, which is subtle but has a comfort between all human beings. And so that is what it's about, to be indoctrinated into the way of any mainstream religion, particularly the Catholic religion, that says this is the way you must believe, this is what you must do, when in my own life I believe there are many paths to whatever we consider to be a god. So that's what the idea of the tenth dimension is about, that someone will seize control of heaven. There will be a scientific way to measure the existence of the human soul, ESP, a scientific way to see what heaven is, and then to grab a hold of that and say, right, now we keep you here. Now your soul will be in purgatory forever unless you do what we say.
You know, Blaze, to be honest with you, I think your post-made material is some of the best heavy metal I've ever heard. And it's unfortunate that, at least in my opinion, that it doesn't get noticed, and you really don't get the recognition that I think this band deserves. I'll never forget, like I said, Silicon Messiah really blew me away, and every record post-Maiden has really blown me away in a sense. And, you know, it's just a shame, and I think you should know that, to be honest with you, I really think that this stuff is really great material.
That's the business side of it. We're only starting out in the business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the music side of it, we feel comfortable with, and we have a way of doing things and a way of thinking, but now we've started our own label, we're just starting on the business side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the information age, for us now, as this small underground band, is that's to our advantage. For bigger artists who sell millions of albums, like Madonna and other artists like that, and perhaps Metallica and people like this, then the information age is a threat, because it threatens a status quo that they have built their success on. For us, we don't have success, so we are finding success using the tools that are available to us and any other person.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, we're very different, so it doesn't hurt us in the way that it hurts a big artist, and it's a benefit to us in a way that it's not a benefit to bigger artists. And I hope, you know, that as fans become more and more used to finding the bands that they like online and then still going to see them, because in the end we are a live band and we go into the studio to record so that we can go out and play those songs live.
Mm-hmm.
As fans see that, then I think perhaps slowly the world will change in our favour.
So do you think that metal bands suffer less from the illegal downloading?
Well, there's two ways to look at it, and the way I look at it is not as much as illegal downloading, but when I was a lot younger, when I was making my first album in LA, then you had KNAC and a lot of other stations where you could hear rock and metal, and you'd go, oh, I like that song, maybe I'll go and get that album, or and stuff like that. Well, if you don't hear that stuff now, how do you do it? And do you really want to commit to buying an album if you haven't heard one song by that band?
Mm-hmm.
Because then that's just hype. You're just you're just saying, you know, someone's put an advert in a magazine or on TV saying, oh, you have to get this album, it's so sexy and incredible. But how do I know it's sexy and incredible? Until I've listened to some of the music, because I'm a music fan, mm-hmm. not a fashion fan. And so for us, I think that when people download a couple of tracks or go onto our MySpace and listen to our music, then it's like, okay, well, they have a sense of what the band is about. And if it's not for them, that's fine. But it's our music, and it's over there in a way that people who really understand music can go, oh, okay, now I see what this band is about. Yes, I will go and get that album, or I will find out more about them, or maybe the next thing is I'll go and see them at the show before I buy a T-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not about fashion at all. So that's why I don't think we suffer as much, because fans of metal and this kind of music and our fans, they're real fans that support us and help us. They're not people who just say, well, I liked Blaze when he wore the three-button shirt, but now he's got the T-shirt, I think I'll change to another band that's more fashionable. You know what I mean?
Something I've always wondered from your Wolfsbane career is the EP, All Hell's Breaking Loose, down at Little Kathy Wilson's place, and I've always wondered, what was that about?
It's loosely based around the 50s movies Invaders from Mars, and which was a kind of metaphor for what was happening with McCarthy's and the witch hunts for people that were in the Communist Party, and it was about paranoia of the time, and the way that the film is and the way that some of the sets are really stark, and in particular the two characters, David and Kathy, who were children in the face of this big nasty world which they don't understand, but they know he's controlling things and trying to change them. That's what the basic idea of the song was about. And also, we're very much a fun band, so we always like to put things in a way that people would listen to it and have fun, and then perhaps get into the idea and the depth of what it was about. So All Hell is Breaking Loose at Little Kathy Wilson's place is Little Kathy Wilson is the character that gets taken over by the Martian invaders, and Little David is her friend who tries to tell the police, but no one will believe him because he's 8.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, everybody knows you sang for Iron Maiden and did co-write a couple tracks, Lord of the Flies and Man on the Edge. And was Man on the Edge, I'm sorry, not Man on the Edge, I mean, was Lord of the Flies based on the movie or the book?
It was based on the book. So I had the book by William Golding, and it's something that I've appreciated for a long time. And Steve had this kind of riff idea, and when we started jamming through it, I thought, oh, well, I think this might go with this. I've had a rough idea for a lyric for Lord of the Flies, so, and I came up with the chorus to the song, so then we worked on the lyrics together. So that's what that one was about. It actually came from the book more than the film, mm-hmm. because the book is quite a bit different to the modern adaptation of the movie. And Man on the Edge, really, that was about the film Falling Down that Michael Douglas did, and which really touched me, because he was a man outside of society trying to live his life even though his circumstances had changed, and not to admit and deal with exactly what the truth of his life was, mm-hmm. because it was too horrible to deal with. And that I really identified with that character, because I feel in my own life I'm an outsider in many, many ways, and that's what that song was about.
And speaking of Iron Maiden, what was it like to audition for that band, and how did you end up joining them?
I was in a band called Wolfsbane, which you know about, and we supported Iron Maiden in the UK on 31 sold-out shows all around the UK, and I got on great with the band, and Steve Harris in particular, and when they were looking for vocalists, then they asked me if I'd like to audition, so I did, alongside, you know, thousands of other people. I auditioned for the band, and and that was it. You know, I was very, very lucky that I got it. I thought it was a really weird decision, a bit strange, because my voice is so different to Bruce Dickinson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my voice is, my range is different, everything, but I'm not going to turn down, you know, a job with my favourite band and the possibility of touring the world and making a huge album. So I thought, well, it's your choice. I'm here and I'm ready to go. So that was it. So I auditioned for them, and it was a fantastic experience. You know, even having the audition, I had to learn 10 songs, all the 10 of the classic songs that are almost always in the set.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, well, you know, for an hour, I'm going to be an Iron Maiden, so I'll just go for it. And that was it. I had a great time, and then you invited back for a second audition to record some stuff, and it seemed to go well, and that was it.
Mm-hmm. Blaze, what is the one thing in your musical career that you are the most proud of? If you had to name one thing, what would it be?
I think it's this album, you know, is the thing I'm most proud of, because it's the thing I've done on my own terms. I have so many wonderful achievements, you know. I've played in front of thousands and thousands of people all over the world. My voice is on millions of albums. Millions of people know it, that are into rock and metal, know my name. But I think the thing I'm the most proud of is the fact that when we're faced with the bitterness of obscurity, that I managed to get a band together with a lot of help, you know, and make an album, and that it's come out and people see that it has value, and many of my fans that have followed me from the very early days say it's the best thing I've ever done. So this is the thing that I'm most proud of, I think, because it comes from a place that I never ever thought it would happen, no matter how hard I worked to get it together, and the crazy story of how we've done it. So this is the thing I'm most proud of, and it's like the lifeboat. And I hope this is the start of something very special.